Let's get to Mikio Kumada, who is joining us for the segment. Mikio is financial economist at LGT Capital Partners, joining from Tokyo. Mikio, a lot of appetite for risk in the U.S. session. Maybe a strange day because they're, you know, with that CPI data coming tomorrow in the wake of the PPI report that was a little above forecast, you'd think that the stock market would take the cue from the bond market. Rates were up today, maybe a little bit of anxiety on the inflation front. How do you justify higher equity prices in the current environment?
Well, you know, I think it's a positioning issue mainly. So if you look at various surveys among institutional investors, including us, I have to say, I mean, most who everyone who has an allocation to public equities is underweight or severely underweight, or at least says so. When you have news that are largely priced in, I mean, you know, inflation is high, so that's not really a huge surprise. And you have just a tiny bit of positive aspect to any news item, or you can construe one, then the market can rally. I have to say that's fine if you're a very short-term trader, but from our perspective, we decided to, as they say, take chips off the table, and we actually reduced our equity allocation in recent days because we thought the rally that we saw this quarter, that was a nice rally to sell, given that the outlook is still, let's say, not necessarily negative, but there is a lot of uncertainty out there as we go into next year.
Yeah, and as we go into next year, how closely are you going to be watching the dot plot when we get it this week? Because, yes, the size of the rate increases is declining, but who knows how many are coming down the track? What are you expecting?
Well, I wouldn't be watching the dot plot that much as I would be watching what the actual economy is doing. And the bottom line, and I'm saying this not because the dot plots isn't that important, but, you know, ultimately it matters how much they will deviate from their own intentions. They didn't want to hike rates initially, you know, if you look more than 12 months backward, but they did. They did jumbo hikes, right? So you have to look at the economy. And the point I would like to stress is that, I mean, in particular, the U.S. economy is just way too strong, and that's not going to bring down inflation. If you look at nominal GDP, it's which is basically everybody's income combined in nominal terms. It's still very close. It's high single digits, very close to 10%, actually. And it's more importantly, way, way above anything that comes to a long-term average. So if you have an economy that's growing nominally at that point, nominal income in the aggregate economy being that strong, it's very hard to imagine, first of all, an earnings recession or any sort of easing in the underlying fundamental price pressures, which is basically too much money sloshing around.
So could you make the case, though, Mikio, that we have yet to really see a lot of the rate increases bite in a way to curtail growth in a meaningful way and by extension to bring down the rate of inflation? And isn't it fair that if the market is thinking that the terminal rate, the destination point on Fed funds may be around 5%, that's reasonable at this point in time? And the real question is, does the Fed keep rates elevated for a long time going forward?
I think that's exactly the point. So the 5%, I mean, to me, on the back of the envelope, seems reasonable. But the question is what happens between now and that terminal 5% rate, right? It's not an exact science of when exactly that'll happen. There is also, I mean, hiking interest rates is not just the only way that a central bank can control money. They can also do things on the quantitative side, or they can keep, first of all, they can do 75 basis points later this month, or I think this week, and then they can keep it there for a while. So that would be, let's say, bad enough until the market gets used to it. It's not really bad because we need to do that in order to get to a very nice and stable place. Remember, the problem is we came from a world of no interest rates, and now we're going to a world with interest rates, and that's actually a very normal world. That's how it should be. And the getting from that point A to point B is very messy, as we saw this year and are likely to see for some time. But ultimately, it's how things. It's closer to how things should be. But yeah, I think the time period of tightness, as you say, will be the critical point as we go into next year, rather than the terminal level of interest rates.
Mm-hmm. So you're long US dollar.
I didn't confuse you too much, but
no, not at all. I guess
the new late
normal
for that now.
The new normal is the old normal, right?
So I tend to do these things. Point being, we don't think really that the Fed is as done as these market rallies suggest, and we'd rather be on the cautious side for now, right? That's basically the essence.
Well, you're also long US dollar, which is old-fashioned, I guess.
Consistent.
Yeah, but
consistent with that view.
Yeah, but if you're looking at the other side of currency pairings, which currencies do you expect to be softest going ahead?
Well, the yen is one of those. Maybe not as soft as it used to be in the earlier stages of the Fed tightening. But it will be one of the weaker currencies, because even if the BOJ shifts, so this is about relative differences in let's say monetary hawkishness, right? So in that sense, even if the BOJ brings in a hawk in Japanese terms, it will be nothing compared to even Europe, which also has to be structurally a lot more hawkish than the U.S. for a variety of reasons, including a war in the neighborhood. The bottom line is the yen is one of those. I am reluctant still to see strength in the British pound. I think they have to rebuild a lot of credibility until they reach that point, even though they are hiking interest rates. And, it is an undervalued currency, and it's certainly the economy is doing below potential. But so it comes down to all the potential strong currencies that are undervalued on fundamental terms, such as Japan or Britain and others, that they are likely to stay soft against the dollar, with one possible exception being the Swiss franc.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Which will be not necessarily stronger than the U.S., but it won't be soft either.
You're a pretty opinionated person. I know that. You've been with us over the years on this program. Weigh in on the crypto space very quickly in about a minute or so, in light of the fact that this FTX collapse and ostensibly what may be criminal activity connected with it. I mean, has it tarnished the asset class overall? Are you positive at all on the future of crypto?
Well, I am. I may be opinionated, as you say, and I appreciate that you have me on your program, but I do not like to comment on criminal issues. However, I will say that, this is also a consequence of higher risk-free rates. And in that sense, it's a good thing. When you have higher risk-free rates, when you have people being able to earn a decent nominal return, you can get 4% or more on a three-month U.S. dollar deposit these days. The threshold for anyone soliciting an investment from you, including a crypto investment, has a higher bar to convince you to give him his money.
Mm-hmm.
And when interest rates rise, therefore, you have a washout of whoever is not up to the task of really having the appropriate.
We did see a washout, no doubt. Mikio Kumada from LGT Capital Partners. Thanks so much. This is Bloomberg.